Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of Constructive Criticism. I'm your host, Spencer, and I'm joined by my co-host, Michael.
How's it going?
Michael, we are joined by the man in which you are a goat because of, Manny Moraes.
I guess.
I feel like, you know, more specifically, you are joined by Manny Moraes.
That's true. I am.
So, like...
so Manny was at my house. I was like, I'm podcasting. It'll take like 40 minutes because we're doing a short episode. And Manny was like, that's too long. And I was like, you want to join? And then he's just here.
Yeah.
Factual.
Yeah.
But also you're crushing it on the local circuit with Pummeler. So like you deserve to be here.
Thank you. I mean, I don't feel like that's very accurate, but thank you.
Well, for those who don't know, Manny is a former co-host of Constructive Criticism. He's a fan favorite. People really, really love Manny. He has always great things to say, and we're excited to have him here with us this week. It's okay. So we're using a standing mic, so you might hear a couple of bumps as Manny and I pick up our drinks as we do this episode. But we're really excited to have Manny here as a surprise guest. And look at Michael's smile. He's excited.
Everybody's surprised.
Everybody's excited. So let's get right into this. So don't forget to check out both of our sponsors at both Oasis Games. You can check them out at mtgoasis.com. You can get 15% off of your first order by using the code CCMTG at checkout. You can get 4% off of every order by using the code WouldThatBeGood. Oasis is honestly the best. Also, I'm finally able to announce that Nick Lassen, Vegas local, is moving to Salt Lake to be the general manager. Nick has been one of my very good friends for a long time in Magic, and we're very excited to have him joining the Oasis team. Becoming the general manager. Expect him on a future episode as actually a guest to kind of talk about building a Magic community and stuff like that. But very excited. And there are two great people you should support, as well as Michael. And Manny is a former employee there too. So just tons of Oasis love on this podcast. Check them out at mtgoasis.com. You can also check out our other sponsor at the Mana Base. You can get awesome Magic content there, whether it's top 8 competitor Danny Cathro on limited time only or top 8 GP competitor Nikachu from the Merfolk Master. There's just great Magic content on that website, and you should go check them out at the Mana Base. And if you're looking for sealed product that Oasis Games doesn't sell, their sponsor at Fusion Gaming does offer that. So check that out at the Mana Base, and we really appreciate both those sponsors. Let's move on to our first segment every week on the show. We'd like to give a little shout out to the newest patrons of our show. If you want to support this podcast, you can become a patron by going to patreon.com/ccmtg. Become a patron. Anything that you see fit is really appreciated, starting at $1 or more per month. If every person listening to the show just donated $1 per month, Michael and I and Danny could quit our jobs and we could do Magic full-time. Like, we wouldn't actually have to work. We would actually be able to go do tournaments and just bring you better Magic content. Look at that smirk on Michael's face. He's like, yeah, that's the dream. So
I don't know if I'd call it working at Oasis work.
But shout-outs to Kyle, Natalie, Kenny, and John as our newest patrons. I think, if I'm not mistaken, they're also Constructed Critics. So they all donated $5 or more per month, which means that they'll have access to deck lists early. They'll have access to Deck Doctor. Just tons of benefits that come with being a $5 or more patron. And we really appreciate each of you. It means the world to us. We actually have a message that I got from Kenny yesterday as he became a patron. He says, I was clicking through patron messages and it reminded me to check you guys out. I was under the impression you guys were in the thousands per month. Your show is that good. I'll try to upgrade my pledge to a higher tier someday. Signed, the diaper guy. So for those who don't know, Kenny one day messaged me on Facebook and was like, hey, I want to support you. I want to help you with your new baby. How can I do that? And I was like, actually, like, it'd be really cool if you, like,
by diapers, changing your name to the diaper guy.
Yeah, diapers would be great. And he like literally sent us way more diapers than I asked for.
I imagine that story going a much different direction.
Yeah, well, you're wrong. He just sent us like diapers that we still aren't out of yet. So thank you so much for that, Kenny. I actually told that story on the podcast when it happened. But thank you so much to all of our patrons. It really does mean the world to us. We don't have a patron question submitted this week, but we do have a deck doc. We do have a deck doctor. But also, if you are a patron, you are able to submit your top 20 cards for Hour of Devastation for our set review next week. So go to patreon.com. There's a thread where you can just post your top 20, and then Michael will assemble that list and we will go. Your voice can be heard and we'll use your top 20 to help us influence the cards that we talk about during our set review for our top 20 cards of our Devastation. So check that out at patreon.com/CCMTG. Let's go into our first segment, which is hashtag always improving. Hashtag always improving is the point of this podcast. We believe if you're not getting better, you're getting worse, and we want to be doing what we can all the time to try and improve. I want to start with Manny this week. Manny, you just got back into Magic the Gathering.
Yes.
You were like, hey, I want to play again. I miss it. I want to play. Like, you went back to your roots in like this aggro deck, but you actually picked up a deck that's really, really hard to play, in my opinion, in Green Red Pummeler, and you went and you just started crushing it.
Yeah, I mean, with that, you know, not knowing anything about the meta, not knowing about even what cards are, you know, what's being played, what decks are out there, I needed to find something that would fit my playstyle, number one, and that would be proactive. You know, I still know how to play Magic. I understand the strategy behind it. A lot of those skills don't go away, even though they're not quite as sharp as they were. And this deck just felt right to me. It felt like something that I could pick up and go.
You even made a few changes from the list I gave you. Talk about really quick, like, just being able to, like, identify that you wanted more Ronus and stuff like that. Like, what are you doing in Magic right now that's bringing you enjoyment?
I mean, I just love steamrolling people.
And Pummeler is a good way to do that.
Yeah. I love steamrolling people, and I love playing as tight of Magic as I can. I like the reason I enjoy the game so much is outplaying people, knowing that I'm going head to head with an opponent, and my play being tighter and better than theirs is why I'm winning. That's what I get out of it. That's what I look for, and that deck I feel like really allows me to do that.
Yeah. Michael, you played a lot of Pummeler. What was your experience with the deck? Do you feel like Manny's accurate? And I feel like it's accurate. Like, you get really rewarded for outplaying your opponent and outthinking them a few turns ahead.
Sometimes. I mean, you also get really rewarded for drawing Ledge Static Pummeler, I would say. Like, key to success, the deck is, like, pretty good if you're good at drawing Pummeler and Blossoming Defense, and pretty bad if you're not, in my experience. So, I'd say primarily, like, draw Blossoming Defense, because then the deck is, like, actually good.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I think the games where that doesn't happen, though, are the most fun ones. I think that's where you get the most rewarding interactions.
I think, too. I think that I also bore down to 2 or 0 Pummeler a lot in that deck, depending on the matchup, mm-hmm. which, you know, like, especially on the draw, specifically. I find myself doing that. And I think
it makes sense. Yeah, especially if you can end up kind of behind on board. They can get funky. There were less Walking Ballistas when I was really playing a lot of it. So
yeah, now that Green Black is a deck with like 4 of Walking Ballista, it kind of changes things up. But Mike, what about you? What have you done to try and improve this week? It sounds like you, I mean, as a Silver Pro, you have a new Weekends Open kind of mentality.
Oh boy, yeah. So I've been trying to find a way to just like keep playing competitive Magic on weekends. So I've been looking at Magic Online schedule and just trying to immerse myself in that. I played the Mox yesterday, which was Modern, and I played a Modern PTQ online today, and both went okay. I played Tron yesterday and started out either 3 or 4-0 before, you know, I stopped being able to draw in pieces of Tron that had different names. And, you know, then the wheels kind of fell off. And today I played Breach Titan, which was interesting. It's not a deck I played a ton of, but I liked it pretty well. And I'd consider playing it again. So I learned some stuff. And
are you playing Modern because, like, what's the reason to be in Modern right now? Is that just what's available to you? Or I'm not a Silver Pro, so I don't know.
No, I mean, they're the only, the Mox is single format every month. So you're not choosing.
Yeah. And PTQs are naturally Modern right now, so.
Well, PTQs are just whatever they are. There's a standard one, like, next Friday. There's a sealed one tomorrow.
Wait, there's a standard one next Friday that's for the current PTQ season?
That would qualify for Albuquerque, yes.
Are you sure?
Yep.
Oh, I might play in that. That's interesting. Because I was looking at the PTQ schedule online, because I like have my setup, and I didn't realize that standard was a format right now. That's interesting.
It's with Hour of Devastation.
Okay. Well, it's good to see that like you're still looking for ways to play Magic. I think that, you know, hitting your goal for the year, but also having a being able to exceed your goal right now. So for those who don't know, if Michael actually goes X4 at the Pro Tour, he actually locks gold. So he, you know, this is a pretty big Pro Tour for you, Michael.
Yeah, I mean, it would be cool if it worked out. But at the same time, like, X4 is really tough. People are really good and, you know, do the best they can, right?
Yeah. But I just think that it's admirable that you're still trying to do everything you can to, like, play competitive Magic and do what you can to improve right now. So
I appreciate that. Thank you.
So for me right now, I have continued on my path of slowing down a little bit. So I did some streaming this week. You know, when I was playing Magic, I was like, well, I might as well stream it. I kind of went on tilt, and I was like, okay, I need to turn off the stream for a minute. I'm on tilt about a play I made like 3 matches ago, and I was able to go win out from when I turned off the stream. Was able to, like, you know, make plus money on afterwards, and, you know, kind of look back on, like, why was I so tilted? Was it because I was streaming? Was it because it was a misclick? Like, what happened there? And I think that just constant reflection is something that I'd like to continue doing as I'm trying to improve and get back to, like, where I was in Magic. And I think that it's really important, because if you aren't reflecting, then you can't really learn something. So something that we do in meetings at work, for example, is after we have, like, an important call with a client or something like that, something that I started on our team is, okay, after the call, like, let's actually reflect on what went well, what we could do better, and what we learned. The reason is not actually what you think it is. It's actually not to collect things. It's actually to make you think. It's actually the real purpose is to make you think about these things that are actually important. And I think that applies to Magic too. After a match of Magic, think about what you did well, think about what you could have improved on, and then think about what you learned. And if you do those things, I actually think that you'll learn faster and you'll understand your games better. And that's something that I'm trying to apply to my Magic game right now.
Yeah, I think being reflective in general just, like, really adds a lot. And I think being conscious of that, like, trying to make that something that you're doing actively rather than something that you hope is happening for you, is really difficult at times, but, like, really, really important.
Yeah, I think so too. Manny?
I think it's hard to ever improve at anything if you can't identify what you're doing wrong.
Yeah. You for one, for those who know Manny, who's been away from the podcast for a while, you've just been getting mad promotions at work, like changing jobs, like changing careers. Like, you were getting promoted at your old job, went into a new place, got promoted.
Yeah.
Like, you are somebody that, even though you're not playing Magic, like, you still embrace this always improving mentality and, like, trying to improve in your real life.
Absolutely.
Why is that?
Actually, I believe it is because of Magic. So it's the corniest thing I'll ever say in my life, and it's terrible that it's going to be recorded. But Magic is a really great tool for teaching me valuable life skills that I transfer to everything and anything, whether it be boxing, shooting, my professional life. Just everything I do, I try and do a little bit better every time I do it.
Yeah, and, like, I was watching some of your shooting videos. So there's Manny has moved on to you know, blowing stuff up with guns. It's pretty impressive. And, you know, like, I just think that having that mindset is really important in life. And I think Manny really exemplifies that. And I think that's why you're one of the fan favorites. Let's move on to I can compliment you without you blushing. It's okay. Tears. Let's move on to our next segment. So our next segment every week is our deck doctor. So every week on the show, we want to talk about a deck that one of our patrons of $5 or more sends to us and kind of go over it. And we talk about 3 specific things: what we love about the deck, what we would change, and where we think the deck stands today. So, Michael, why don't you go ahead as our designated reader and read this deck list for us?
Yeah, it's a talent. especially because this one is in alphabetical order. So we're going to start by reading the lands. There are 3 Canyon Slough, 4 Foreboding Ruins, 9 Mountain, 2 Smoldering Marsh, and 4 Swamps. For creatures, you have 4 Blood Rage Brawler, 4 Haunted Dead, 4 Hollow One, 4 Prized Amalgam, and 4 Scrap Keep Scrounger.
So, and then 2 Unlicensed Disintegration.
Well, those aren't creatures.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And then spells, We have 4 Cathartic Reunion, 2 Cut to Ribbons, 4 Fiery Temper, 2 Key of the City, 4 Lightning Axe, and 2 Unlicensed Disintegration, with the sideboard being 2 Abrade, 2 Biforce, 2 more Cut to Ribbons, 3 Descended Mindbender, 4 Labor of the Heart, and rounding out the playset of Unlicensed Disintegrations.
Okay. Okay, so first of all, to start off, this deck is this deck is featuring cards from the new set, you know, specifically
Hollow One.
Yeah. So let's kind of start with that. So what does that card do, Michael?
So I haven't looked at this card today, but my memory is that it's a 5-mana 4/4 that costs 1 less to play for each card you've discarded or cycled this turn.
I think it's 2 less.
Is it 2 less to play?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it's 2 less and it has cycling for 2. So it's 5 mana for a 4/4. Each card that you discard makes it cost 2 less.
That's an interesting one.
So it costs 1 mana from a Haunted Dead, right?
Or a Cathartic Reunion, yes.
Okay. So like on turn 3, it's a 1 mana 4/4 plus whatever effect you just used.
Yeah, at least potentially. And I think that that's like clearly pretty powerful. My main concern is just that maybe Key to the City will help alleviate this, but as the game goes on, I worry about actually without cards with cycling. So like cards with cycling work better in some ways than like Haunted Dead does with Hollow One would be my guess, and that's because they actually replace themselves in your hand. Right, so it's hard to keep having all of these cards that are making you discard over and over and over again between like Blood Rage Brawl and Haunted Dead, and still have more cards to discard and Hollow Ones to cast and land drops to make.
Does that matter when, like, because the Hollow One's already in play, unless you have to do earlier. But the thing is like here's my thought, and maybe you can speak to this, Michael, is that I don't know that I'm going to skip like the turn that I'm going to play a. Something like Cathartic Reunion so that I can save it for a Hollowed One, which is my problem with the deck. Like if I can Cathartic Reunion on turn 2 and put a Haunted Dead and a Prized Amalgam in my yard, I'm just going to do it.
Right. I worry that in this style of deck, it's going to end up being more like a 3-mana 4/4 with a pretty big drawback a lot of the time.
So, what's the drawback?
Well, that you're having to hold it. Right, yeah, it's secretly a 5, it's like, what is the card that you can, like Illusory Angel, where you can only cast it if you've played a spell before it this turn?
Oh, sure, I know what you're talking about, the white-white 3-3 flyer.
It's two and a blue for a 4/4 flyer, but you can only cast it if, I can't remember if it's another creature or just a spell.
Oh, I was thinking of the 3-3 for white-white.
Sure, like Sarah Avenger?
Yeah.
Yeah, but kind of the same idea, right, where, like, the cost is good, but I think that it ends up playing a lot more like Sarah Avenger, and I wonder how much... Like, with Sarah Avenger, the evasion is really key. If you aren't flying over things and you're not really coming down, especially early, like, if it's still coming down on turn 4, it's good for going wide. But I feel like this deck is already pretty good at doing that kind of thing with Haunted Dead and Prized Amalgam.
Yeah. One thing that I will say is I don't know that it takes away anything, right? I think that you might actually just be getting an inexpensive card rather than adding one. The deck synergizes with the deck that, like, you and I have already tried for Pro Tour testing, right? So it's not like this deck, it doesn't exist. It's not like we haven't already tried it. The question, really, is it better than Grixis with something like Elder Deep Fiend?
Well, something like that. I would be curious to try a mana base that included more cycling lands. I would be curious to try Grixis for that reason. Because I think one of the ways Hollow One is really sweet is if you actually are just, like, getting to cycle 2 things for free as you play it, or something along those lines. Like, rather than trying to sort of cheat it into play, I'm interested in, as we get to the mid game, is this a card that lets me turn lands into something else and advance my board state on the same turn? I think it might be interesting, and it might be able to do the same thing really in this deck too. It's hard to say, having not actually played any games with the card, obviously.
Manny, as somebody who's really a fan of synergy decks like you are, you know, whether it's, you know, Bant, what was the deck?
Heroic.
Banner Heroic or stuff like that. These aggressive synergy decks. Are there things that you look for when you're building a synergy deck? Like how much of the synergy is important versus what the deck is actually doing?
What I look for, I think, most is probably how much of a glass cannon it is. I mean, synergy is great and it's fantastic when you can get it going, but what's your game plan if you can't or if things don't go the right way?
Okay.
That's typically what I look at.
All right.
I like that this deck specifically has a lot of stuff that I'm cool with discarding, like between Scrap Heap Scrounger, Prized Amalgam, Cut to Ribbons, and Fiery Temper. One of the things that can be awkward in decks like this is you'll just get into spots where you actually don't want to discard some of the cards in your hand, but you have all these cards that discard as a cost. My one note from trying decks like this in the past is that I've always been pretty underwhelmed by Blood Rage Brawler, mainly because so much of the time you end up having to cast it off curve that it ends up sort of like my same concerns with Hollow One sort of are the same as Blood Rage Brawler, sure. Right? That like if I'm playing it on turn three so I can cast the Fiery Temper I'm discarding as well, how much does
did
it really
did
help
you
me
actually
I'm getting
get
a deal on the 4/3, right? Like it's mm-hmm. obviously something, but it also cost me two cards. So it's like there's just real cost there.
That makes sense. Well, I hope I want to say that I do love your attempt to include like a clearly very powerful card like Hollow One in your deck. Hank, I think that you're also trying to incorporate it into a deck that it's already really close, and so you're thinking ahead of like what was close enough, like what does this add to and things like that. So I really appreciate that Brewer's mindset on that, and thank you so much for your deck doctor. We didn't really doctor this deck. I actually don't know that I would change much.
It's so
I actually
to say
would probably test.
Point. Yeah. Hollow One though is a card that I really would like to try. It's definitely powerful.
And kind of like Michael said, I think the Key to the City is just one of the most underplayed cards in Standard. I think that what happened is we lost Smuggler's Copter, which was really meant to be played with Key to the City in those style of decks. And because of that, like Key to the City has really suffered, and this might be a good way to include that. So good job looking at that, Hank, and let's keep move forward to that. And we'll keep you updated. If we have anything to say on that, we'll actually just post that right into the Constructed Critics group where you can see it. So I think we'll test something similar to this, Hank, and we'll keep you updated. Let's move on to our next segment, which is Card of the Week. Card of the Week is something we do every week. Once a month, we'll give out Card of the Month and give out a play set of something super awesome. This week is Oketra's Monument. I was going to do Card of the Week this week, but the only card that spoke to me was Oketra's Monument, so I didn't want to give you a play set of an uncommon, so that's why we're not giving out Card of the Month this week. But Oketra's Monument is just putting in weird work. All right, so for those who don't know, the card is 3 mana for an artifact that whenever you cast
a legendary artifact. Right?
A legendary artifact, thank you. That whenever you cast a creature, you put a 1/1, is it warrior or soldier?
I think it's like a cat soldier or something with vigilance.
Into play. And then it makes white creatures you control cost one less.
I played against this.
Oh, you beat it.
I did, yeah.
Yeah. So I have not lost to this card yet. I played against the blue-white version twice on Modo this week because the deck top-aided the SCG Invitational. But I want to say that this is a card that I'm sure that we just got wrong on the podcast. You know, when we do these set reviews and we don't include cards like this, this card is clearly making an impact on Standard. I don't know how long it will be for. But I think that when I heard this deck was a thing, I dismissed it. But since playing against it, I do think that it has a legitimate strategy between it and Dusk to Dawn that I didn't expect.
Yeah.
You're nodding your head.
Dusk to Dawn is cool. And Todd Anderson playing the version from Magic Online with the 4 Cloud Blazers and the 4 Spell Quellers seemed pretty sweet. Like Cloud Blazer especially, you can just kind of actually go off when you have a monument in play, costing 4 and then draw 2, gain 2, make a 1/1.
And then next turn just play like 3 spells.
Yeah, it's just actually powerful. It's kind of a weird deck, and it's probably only a very good deck as long as Westvale Abbey remains
legal.
Well, legal and powerful.
Sure.
Right, I mean, because there are times where Westvale Abbey just gets kind of crappy.
Manny, you were saying you played against this deck. I assume it was the mono white version.
No, it was a homebrew. I probably wouldn't put any validity in my play against that deck as far as information.
What kind of cards did you see though?
Just not good ones.
But the deck doesn't play good cards, so that doesn't mean that it's not a deck.
Oh, okay.
So like things like Aviary Mechanic, like the 2/2 that bounces a guy.
No, I didn't see that.
What kind of cards did you see?
Just nonsense, man. Like honestly.
The deck is nonsense, so I think that what you're seeing is...
So you're thinking I just didn't understand that
one of the cards that really impressed me was it Hanmar Militia? What is the name of the card?
Hanmar Militia Captain.
Yes. Wow! This card, he played three of them the following turn, and I was like, oh, I lose this game. This is a game I lose.
Have, like, you know, three 10-10s that also make guys... Yeah.
So what does this card do? Why is this card in the deck?
So it's just a bear, right? And then if you have four or more creatures during your upkeep, I believe it flips. And if it flips, then its power and toughness are each equal to the number of creatures you control. And on your end step, it makes a 1/1. So it just kind of gets out of control. You're like, everything's fine. Oh, I'm chump blocking with my 8/8 Bristling Hydra. What happened?
Yeah, so
they're like nice glory bringer. Yeah, you're not exerting that one.
I think that what the blue-white deck was able to do was able to kind of cut the chaff from the deck, play less of like the quote-unquote bad cards, and like play more of the real cards that the deck is offered. You know, also being able to like have this weird spell queller plan. I think that the deck just had a lot added to it by just adding blue. Michael, you seem to think the same thing.
Yeah. I mean, I think Cloud Blazer like makes a lot of sense because one of the ways the deck can kind of just if you draw a couple too many lands. I know people were playing Wygon Bishop before. I don't know if they still are, but it's really, really mana intensive, and you don't really want to play a very high land count to begin with. So Aviary Mechanic is one way to mitigate flooding a little bit, but it's a pretty bad magic card without Monument.
Yeah.
And Cloud Blazer, like, well, also kind of being bad without Monument. If the game devolves into something pretty grindy, you can just like pull way ahead of your opponent over a couple of turns with just like Cloud Blazer into Aviary Mechanic, pick up my Cloud Blazer.
Sure.
Right. I think it's kind of cool.
Yeah. I think Okedra's Monument just made unplayable cards playable. And that is just the kind of typical card that you'll miss in a set review. So
it's just a cool card, right? I mean, it's like kind of a weird deck, but like, I don't know. It's not often that, you know, you're playing against an Aviary Mechanic and you're like, oh boy, I really hope they don't draw a second one. But I've had that feeling a couple of times where I'm like, man, if they draw a second Aviary Mechanic, I am screwed.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's wrap that up. So that's card of the week this week. Don't forget to be prepared for Oketra's Monuments deck. So we were gonna do Power Rankings on Pauper this week, but it's 4th of July weekend. We don't wanna like hook, you know, control people's lives too much with a podcast. So we're actually going to skip Deck of the Week and Power Rankings. However, if you are interested, we are interested in producing a Pauper podcast. So we have somebody who's actually already offered to do hosting. I'm happy to help with the producing, you know, helping with kind of like outlines of shows, things like that. Message me. That's Spencer Stephen Hallen on Twitter. We want a competitive Pauper podcast. Pauper is exploding on Magic Online from things like these. What are they, like 2Ks on Magic Online every weekend? Like, they're crazy.
What are you saying?
Yeah, you can play some pretty good value events on Magic
so
Online.
So Manny's away for Magic. So for those who don't know, Legacy, Vintage, Modern, and Pauper all have these
It's one-on-one commander too, right?
Yeah. All have these insane like 2K events on Magic Online every weekend. No, it's not as bad. It's different than regular commander.
I'm still like, my mind is being blown from the one-on-one commander. What?
It's not the same as regular commander. It has different ban lists. It's like 1v1 commander.
Okay.
Yeah, it's fine. I understand the confusion.
It's only been 14 months.
but yeah, so if you are interested in like hosting a competitive Pauper podcast, we want to help with that. So message me at Spencer Stephen Hallen. Let's move on to our training grounds this week. So this week we want to talk about like what removal you should put in your deck. One of the great reasons to have Manny on this podcast is Manny has played aggro and control extensively in his time playing Magic. So this is something that he can speak to. And we want to talk to you really quick about, like, the kind of things that you should consider when picking your removal spell, more than, like, telling you what to put in your deck. Because, you know, teach a man to fish, he can catch a lot of fish. You know, hand a man a fish, he's got a fish. That kind of thing. I'm sure I said that wrong. Actually, I know I said it wrong. But let's get right into this.
That's the right idea.
Let's start with the first question, Michael. And this is one that I think that people get wrong sometimes. We can look at the Oketra's Monument deck, for example. Does your deck want removal?
Well, I think the answer is usually, but maybe another, an interrelated and kind of integral question to answering, does your deck want removal? Since the answer is usually going to be yes, the question then is, what would you want removal for?
Right. And also, right? How much...
So not all removal... Right. Not all removal is created equal. And more than, like, does your deck want removal, why does your deck want removal?
Yeah, a good example of this is, like, burn decks are happy to play, or aggro decks are happy to, like, play burn spells as removal that go face or creature. But, like, is it really removal, or does it act as removal? Another example is, like, mono-white aggro decks are, like, they want tempo spells... Sometimes the best tempo spells are removal.
But like, or like Searing Blaze and Burn, right? Like,
yeah.
So Searing Blaze feels really powerful out of Burn. So why wouldn't, you know, Jeskai Control want to play Searing Blaze, right? Even if Searing Blaze caught like red, white, or it was palatable to cast, I don't think you'd see most decks playing it.
Yeah. No, I think that what your deck wants is going to be important in this. And we can't tell you what every single deck is going to want, but it's going to be something that you're going to have to think about as you're picking your removal package. Mm-hmm. You know, like...
And I mean, that is something that's so important when you have such a large card base in, let's say, Modern or Legacy, where you have access to so many cards. Like Michael was saying, you really want to narrow down what you want the result to be of playing that card. Do you want to deal 3 damage and 3 to their face, or is it so much more important for you to have the ability to exile one of their creatures?
You know, one of the things that really speaks to this is, for a very, very long time, I was an advocate of Wizards printing 1 mana, instant speed, deal 3 damage to target creature. I was like, I think this card is perfect for Standard. I think that it's perfect for Magic. I think that it fits two specific deck types really well between midrange and control. They did one better. They printed Fatal Push, right? And then all of a sudden you have all of these decks moving away from Lightning Bolt and into Fatal Push territory. And I think that just kind of speaks to, like, knowing what your decks want. It's like, well, I could play Lightning Bolt that's more versatile, or I could just play Fatal Push, which does what I actually want it to do.
Right. Right. And I think that Modern right now has moved into a funny place where
it's no longer a Lightning Bolt format.
Lightning Bolt is mostly unplayable. I have very little interest in playing Lightning Bolt in just about anything these days. And I think it's pretty clear why, right? I mean, the things you want to kill just have more than 3 toughness. And going face isn't really good.
Let's actually talk about it. It just doesn't do anything. Let's talk about this. So one of the first things that we have on this training grounds is, like, what's in the format? And the first thing that we have listed is the toughness of creatures. This applies to Limited really easily, right? So, like, when you think about Limited, you think about all those things that deal 1 damage to a creature, put a -1/-1 counter. Those cards are directly playable depending on the number of playable X1s. This is true for Standard, too. So when you look at, like, let's look back to the Primeval Titan Volokut Standard, where Lightning Bolt was in the format for 2 years. And what did they do? They printed Overgrown Battlement as a ramp spell in that format, right? It's an 0/4. It's a 0/4 creature that you can tap to add 1 green mana to your mana pool for each defender in play, including itself. Why did they do that? They did that because they're like, all right, we need to give you a ramp spell that's good against aggro, that also, like, is good against Lightning Bolt, and they purposely did that. And this is how they dictate a lot of things. You know, you look at the times that they print things like Doomblade versus Ultimate Price, right? They do this because of what's in the format, right, Michael?
Right. And then when you're considering what you're looking at playing, right, Ultimate Price is maybe great if you're looking for a removal spell to play against mono red, right? You're thinking, all right, I need a cheap removal spell to kill early creatures, to kill Goblin Rabble Masters. Ultimate price, great choice. Now, if you're expecting to play against a lot of, you know, Abzan, and you're needing to kill Anafenza, Siege Rhinos, and Fleece Mane Lions, ultimate price looks kind of stupid.
And right? If you look back on some of those formats, you'll see something like Grasp of Darkness seeing zero play, right? So the toughness and power of creatures really does dictate. Grasp of Darkness in the Ishkana format was not that good, because all you cared about killing was Ishkana, right? So you would play other things to try and deal with Ishkana. And that same thing can be applied to Standard today, where you have to actually understand, like, if my removal is dealing something, dealing damage, or minus one counters, or minus X, this is something that I have to consider before putting this card in my deck.
Mm-hmm. Right. So I think the Oketra's Monument deck is a really sweet example of this. So it has basically, they typically play two different removal spells, and these removal spells are Dusk Dawn and some number of Stasis Snares or Cast Outs. So when you look at this, what are they trying to kill? So Dusk Dawn, I think, is relatively obvious. They basically just don't have anything that gets over three power. So the deck, because it makes so many 1/1s, is bound to get in a lot of board stalls, and, you know, having this card to solve that problem, really powerful. Stasis Snare or Cast Out are interesting in that I think they primarily keep you from dying to Heart of Kirin, and they stop Avacyn from flipping. So you sort of picked two very specific problems in the format, or, you know, with what your deck has to deal with, and you're saying, okay, so we could play Declaration in Stone. It's more efficient. It's cheaper. We're a deck that plays a lot of cheap spells. But it doesn't, right, but it doesn't solve a problem that we actually have. And I think that can sometimes be true of even spells that are good in a vacuum, like Declaration in Stone, which has seen very little play in the last 6-8 months, mostly because of vehicles. It can be true of Grasp of Darkness at times, either for mana consideration reasons, if it's just very difficult to play a heavy black deck, or if the -4/-4 isn't particularly relevant. But I think just being able to identify when a spell is good and bad will really help you choose the right ones to play.
Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, the important way to look at it, I feel like, is these cards are answers to questions you have. What can't you beat? What do you need to beat? And that's where your card selection comes into play.
And I think that, Michael, one of the points that you mentioned for Avacyn, for example, is kind of important to our next point, which is, like, in this format, what turns matter? When do I need to have answers for particular cards that I might have a hard time with? Like, I have to have this card have a mana cost of this to pick the removal spell in my deck, because this is a hard turn for me.
Absolutely. And I think that what you might see with a card like Declaration in Stone is, although it's cheaper, you are so often just playing to the board on the early turns of the game, because very few of the early game creatures matter to you, that being cheaper is not as much of an advantage as you might think it is. And in fact, the cycling of something like Cast Out might actually prove more relevant, because you're able to just get rid of it when you're not looking for that specific removal spell. So it's not always completely intuitive, but I think if you look at these decks and you think about, you know, why are they playing what they're playing? What, like Manny said, what question are you trying to answer? What is the question what cards specifically are giving you problems? Not just what decks, but what cards? You can really get a good feel for why you should choose to play specific removal spells in different situations.
And I think that another thing, and the next point of our list, is kind of the converted mana cost of cards really matters when you're picking your removal spells. So for example, if I'm trying to answer like a 2-mana threat, I'm probably not going to pick a 4-mana removal spell to try and do that. And I might actually pick a different deck if I actually can't find the right answers and the right removal. You know, when you look at something like Heart of Kirin or Scrap Heap Scoundrel, there's a reason the go-to answers are Magma Spray and Aether Meltdown. It's because you have to answer the cards correctly, otherwise you're going to fall behind. It kind of ties into the turn that matters too, right? So if, one of the reasons that cast out is an okay answer against Abyssin is because you can answer Abyssin on the play or the draw with it. And you have to think about those things when you're picking the cards you want to play with.
Yeah, I think, again, a lot of this just comes down to if you play matches with a deck and you sketch out what is problematic for you, it's usually pretty clear what removal spells you could potentially want, and from there moving into sort of a mix, right? So looking at the turns that matter, so is it really important that you are able to, say, kill Grim Flayer on the draw? You might not want to try to be killing it with Grasp of Darkness because it might be hard to have untapped black into untapped black on turn two, or untapped green into untapped black so that you can play another spell along with your Grasp of Darkness. Whereas if you're killing Heart of Kirin, the critical turn is one later, so maybe Grasp of Darkness is a better spell for that. You know, when do these spells have downsides, right? So if people are really keen on Veteran Motorist, you might like Grasp of Darkness a little bit less in that it obviously can't answer a Gideon, but it might also sometimes not answer Heart of Kirin.
Manny, right? if somebody, I remember like your transition from like hyper aggressive decks into like control decks.
Yes.
You know, what was your opinion in like when you look at whether it's the toughness of creatures, the turns that matter, the CMC, or even our next points, which are the creature's abilities, is there something that you looked for in your removal spells other than versatility?
Efficiency. I wanted to see what I could be doing and to maximize what I could be doing. It was very important to me, right? If you're playing control deck mid-game, if you are on the draw, let's say, to be able to remove the thing you're most worried about, let's say a Planeswalker, a very powerful creature, to be able to remove that, play your win condition, and still be able to have a negate for backup.
So double spelling is pretty important. So mana efficiency is like pretty important.
Absolutely. I feel like with a control deck, that's what you're trying to do. Once you do that, once you can be doing more than one thing a turn, once you be drawing more cards than your opponent, playing more lands, I mean, how can you lose?
Yeah, one of the reasons that I really like green-black in this format is actually its ability to double spell, Michael. Is that something that you've experienced in Standard recently, is like the deck that gets to double spell first is often the deck that pulls ahead, which is why Mardu was ahead for so long.
Right. I think both green-black and Mardu are very good at that right now. And I think that because they're trying to play, you have to look at the spell in the context of the deck, right? So why is it that Green Black and Mardu are able to play all these fatal pushes, but control decks aren't, right? It's a combination of being able to turn on Revolt and trying to end the game in the set of turns where the only things that are in play are things with CMC 4 or less.
Right.
Right. So in those decks, when you're talking about double spelling, you're looking at like playing a 2 and a 1 or a 2 and a 2, maybe on the upper end of that, right? Very, very rarely are we talking about playing like a 3 and a 4, right? When you're looking at control decks, sometimes double spell might be Glimmer of Genius and Harness Lightning or something along the, or Glimmer of Genius and Disallow, right? So you have to evaluate the cards within the context of the deck you're looking to play them in as well.
And I think that, you know, like, when we talk about the ability of creatures, the thing that I have written down is indestructible and hexproof. Indestructible doesn't really matter right now. It is something that you have to think about whether, like, Gideon matters, right? So I actually had a game in the top 8 against Matt Kling where I was looking at my hand and I was like, I wonder if I can do this to this Gideon, and had to read Gideon to check. And I could not. So Gideon actually becomes indestructible. But something that's important, though, is Bristling Hydra is everywhere and it gains hexproof. Blossoming Defense is everywhere, and it you know, gives hexproof. So hexproof is something you have to really worry about. The cards that you have to play are important. They don't just naturally have hexproof, but hexproof is something you have to worry about. But one thing that I will say, you know, as you were saying this, I actually thought about Long Tusk Cub. Long Tusk Cub should be, from pure power level, should actually probably be one of the best cards in the format. But the fact that Mardu and Greenblack both get to answer it with a one mana spell like Fatal Push is actually really important. Because it actually doesn't matter what part of the game it's on. This card that should actually take over the game and just really destroy people is answered by this one mana spell, but that both these best decks get to play.
Right. In addition, I think when you're looking at removal spells, it depends on the style of deck you're playing, right? There's a lot less of a cost to holding up Grasp of Darkness in a deck where you're kind of planning on leaving mana up anyways, as opposed to a deck like the Black-Green Constrictor deck, where oftentimes you're spending all the mana on your turn, right? So if we're looking at spells we're comfortable holding up, you might say, well, my opponent might have Blossoming Defense, so I don't really want to cast this Fatal Push right now. I'm going to cast it at a time where I think it will tax his mana, or I'm going to try to essentially strip mine both of us, right? If I have to hold up this black for Fatal Push, and he has to hold up this green for Blossoming Defense, you know, there's play to that, and that's something you can exploit. But if you're playing more expensive, more clunky removal spells like Ruinous Path or Never to Return, there are going to be times in games where
you don't get to make that choice.
You don't get to, I mean, I guess those are bad examples because they're sorceries, but say even like something like Hero's Downfall, you might just have to go for it because the reality is, you know, whether or not they have a Blossoming Defense style effect or a God's Willing, sure, right? If we were playing a heroic match, sure, you're going to lose the game just by triple stone raining yourself.
Right. Yeah. If so, you, like, I mean, this is true of like the sensor problem, right? Is like, how often do you play around something like Sensor? And you know, the abilities of creatures and the things that you have to take into consideration in the format affect how you play your removal and what removal you play. I don't know what the correct answer is for your deck because I don't know what your deck is as a listener, but I do know that these are the things that you need to take into consideration while you're doing it. And I think what's important here is, like, knowing the things that we put down. What are the toughness of creatures? What turns matter to you? What are the CMC of creatures in the removal you're trying to play? What are the abilities of those creatures? And then what is your end goal? How much life are you willing to lose to these creatures? What is the impact that these creatures have on the game? And then just play your removal accordingly are really the important things here.
Yeah, I think that's really good. I think just being cognizant of all of the card choices you have, really, and more than just being aware of them, understanding why, right?
Yeah.
If you know why you'd like to play something, then you're able to make an informed decision.
Yeah. So that is it for our training guides this week. Thank you everybody for your support. Let's move on to our next event. So don't forget that our next Patreon goal is actually upgrading our equipment. I actually have a anti-shout out to myself. I like invited Manny to do this show. And we have an audio interface and headsets, like, literally 5 feet away from me. Ugh. And I just forgot.
I mean, I think it's okay. I said, like, 20 words. It's fine.
I actually thought you added great value to this.
Oh, thank you.
And hashtag would that be good is about to start, so.
Oh, yeah, that's my favorite.
But, yeah, so we will be – I'm actually – the podcast is going to be buying – Michael's headset just went out. So he and I will actually just get the same headset. I just need to figure out, Michael, do you need a USB one or do you need a two-pronged one, the mic and the headset one?
What? What do you, why would you need that?
What is a
laptop from 1995?
No. So, like, I bought a special piece for mine. Uh-huh. For those who are watching. It actually works like this. But because I use my Mac, I need the USB end, but whatever you need.
I have multiple headphone jacks on my computer. It doesn't matter.
All right. Well, we'll upgrade Michael's equipment. We'll get us on the same level there. You can support that. The podcast space for that, go to patreon.com/ccmdg. Everything that you see fit, anything that you see fit is really appreciated. So check it out at patreon.com/ccmdg. Michael, where can people find you?
You can find me on Facebook. My name is Michael Hinderocker. You can also find me on Twitter at MagicMikeMTG.
Manny, if people want to learn about your gun habits and your champion gun tournaments, as well as like your pummeling people, where can they find you?
I don't know, actually. I don't know any of my Twitter or Instagram.
I know.
News
I'm
anymore.
Pretty sure it's Rain Manny.
Oh yeah, it is Rain Manny.
I'm pretty sure it's Rain_Manny.
Got that at a PPTQ.
And then you can also find Manny in the Constructive Criticism Facebook group. He does comment there, ask questions there. He interacts with people who mention him. So you can do that.
I'm like the boogeyman. If you tag me, I will come.
So you can do that at the Constructive Criticism Family. You can find me on Facebook at Spencer Stephen Hallen. You can find me on Twitter at Spencer3H. You can find the podcast every week on ConstructiveCriticism.com, MTGCast.com, and the Mana Base. So, and on YouTube and Twitch now. So thank you so much to our executive producer. That's not what he is. He's a technical producer. He doesn't get enough credit. His name is Mason.
Maybe you should make him an executive producer.
No, I'd have to pay him more. Mason, why don't you unmute your mic and tell people where they can find you?
All right. You can find me on Twitter at SOVMason, and then you can find me in the Constructive Criticism group in the Criticism Critics. Is that what it's called? The Patreon one?
Constructive Critics, yeah.
Constructive Critics,
but
yeah.
They also can watch you stream. Where can they watch you stream at, Mason?
They can find me at SOV Live on Twitch. I try to stream Sundays, Mondays, and Wednesdays for a couple hours each day. So try to stream today, it crashed, but try and do that every week. So it's awesome.
Mason,
and here.
I was going to say, Mason is awesome. He deserves all of the credit that we try and give on the show, plus more. So shout out to Mason for all he does. Michael's smile is because, like, Mason's probably underpaid and we really appreciate him.
It's all good. At least your wife stood up for me. That's what really matters. Yeah.
All right. Turn off your mic. Mr. I like pineapple on
get
pizza.
Get that pineapple off your pizza.
Yeah.
Pineapple belongs on pizza.
It's a good thing Manny's not a coast anymore, else we'd have to fire him. You can join the conversation by joining the Constructive Criticism family, which we've already mentioned. You can also tweet at us with hashtag WithItBeGood. You can also join the Discord channel, which is super inactive. It's our fault for not keeping inactive, but I'm actually logged in all day at work. So if you want to join the Discord channel, I'm actually just in there. I'm always in there. So you can find all of those links on the contact page on constructivecriticism.com. And you can also join the client. You could message me at Spencer13Deb on MTGO, and we'd be happy to add you to that client. And you can also tweet at us with hashtag with the big good. Hashtag with the big good is our Twitter outreach program. As Michael likes me to say, if you tweet it, we'll read it. And let's start with the last. Oh, I have the wrong one. So we got to go to the latest. And it's, we have
the Matt finding out that Portal 2 is only $2 on Steam because it's 90% off for the summer sale, and having $2 in your Steam wallet. Hashtag, would that be good?
That seems good. Portal's pretty good, right, Manny?
I never played it.
Oh, you should. It's...
I like only play video games where people's brains get splattered.
Oh, okay. Have you played it, Michael?
Yeah, I've played some of it. I think the real sweet thing here is, like, if you have $2 in your Steam wallet, like...
And then you gotta buy a video
game.
I don't
really want to add more, but, like, you know, if I can use it all, yeah, it sounds great.
It's like paying for something at the gas station in exact change.
All right, I need to understand this. So we have Matthew Gellies.
Oh my gosh, Iglesias.
Iglesias says, "Shut up." I appreciate you not swearing.
Yeah, you're welcome. It was very hard.
If only journalists in the briefing room had pocket-sized cameras capable of shooting video and connecting to the internet. And then, still more info. This has got to not be for us.
This is
the first not for us in a long time. Like, since, like, you know, like jelly donuts and like all kinds. So hashtag would be good. A sea of eyes, and then a link to the Amazon. So here's the thing.
A sea of glasses?
They're Snapchat glasses that you can buy.
All right. Amazon. So here's the thing. We don't talk about politics on this podcast, but also.
I mean, I think everyone should call Sean Spicer spicy.
So Sean Spicer got fired.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
How did I not know about this? I'm going to miss those Saturday Night Live skits so much.
I think that might be why he got
Melissa
fired.
McCarthy is so funny.
All right. No comment, but also, like, freedom of the press. Jared says, at Spencer13H, adding Young Pyros and Jace Rubin's party to Gracious Shadow with claim to fame. Hashtag would be good. So, I don't have an opinion on this. So I've thought about Claim to Flame a lot over the last, like, 3 days. So for those who don't know, it's a split card that's one black, return target creature with a current mana cost two or less to the battlefield for one black. And then its aftermath is a red and one. Or is it a red and two?
I think it's one.
Do you know, Michael?
It's one and a red, and it pops up a simple summon, gives it haste.
Plus two plus O.
Sure, whatever. I'm not worried about that part of it.
So here's the truth. Giving Jace Rune's Prodigy haste seems powerful. I don't know what you're cutting from this really tight deck for this card.
You would just have to rebuild the deck a little bit. It would have to be built differently. I don't think Young Pyromancer is good enough. I think Young Pyromancer specifically almost just needs Cabal Therapy. But Thought Scour makes me pretty interested in trying some number of Claim to Fame. It's also just pretty good with like Snapcaster Mage. Right?
Like, yeah, if you can just, like, I think Snap is like the reason to play the card.
I'm not sure you need Jace.
Yeah, I think so too. I think Snap is just good enough. Because like it's a Snap at a discount, right? It's not like you're playing 2+1 for the card. You're actually just playing 1 for a Snapcaster Mage and then it snaps back whatever you want. All your spells cost 1 or 2 anyway. It just doesn't matter.
Oh. And I mean, you can also like snap it back and then snap comes into play ability, can target it, and then you can like unearth your Death Shadow too. It's kind of gross.
At Spencer13H, this is from Just Guy's Sanity, which is Andrew. He says, Mason didn't tell you about the pizza thieving experience at the PPTQ Saturday, LOL. Hashtag with a be good. Hashtag it's cool. Hashtag I'm commentary. So here's the thing that I know about Mason is he likes pineapple on pizza. I don't trust him with pizza. He's probably going to steal it. He's probably going to put pineapple on it while you're not looking. He's a disgusting human being.
I mean, he's going to make it better.
He'll just put pineapple on it, and then no one will want it anymore. So it's as good as thorn.
This is me dropping the mic. All right. At Ruben says, at CCMTG, Exelon Vehicles, Pirate Skyship pulled by Pterodactyls. Hashtag would be good. So this is a following tweet like by him asking, how does Ixalan affect the kind of the vehicles deck? So once Gideon rotates. I actually already answered this on Twitter. I don't know. So do I believe that vehicles are strong? Yes. Do I believe that we have support for the vehicles after Gideon rotates? Yes. Do I know what it looks like? No. Could it be a 3-color deck that isn't Mardu? Maybe. It could be green. Go ahead.
The green-red shell, because people have played Heart in there, and it's been pretty good. Like, it's pretty good with Green Belt Rampager. Yes. Pretty good with Ronus, that kind of stuff. I don't know. I'd be willing to try it at least, but obviously, like, it's kind of
you're mind blown right now. I sent you that deck list. So Manny's been playing Pummeler. There's actually a green red energy deck that like doesn't play Pummeler that plays Heart.
Yeah, it's just like less pump spells and no
and more creatures and removals.
Yeah, sure.
Sounds better.
Well, it depends on if you're
depends
on the
how many walking ballistas you're playing against.
Yeah, and it depends on the walking ballista. It kind of just depends.
Okay.
Bachelor in Paradise shooting again, so we will have it this summer. Manny, what do you think about this?
The Bachelor?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't watch that show. It's weird. It's like a bunch of psychopaths doing really gross, just unethical things to each other all the time, and people watch and pretend like it's normal.
So is it Corinne? Is that her name? I don't know. I'll have to defer to Michael on the babysitting front. Michael, is this good or bad?
I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to watch it either way, so...
You have like one person dating like 20 other people, right?
Yeah, that's
not how Bachelor Paradise doesn't work that way.
I don't care. Look, you have one person dating 20 people, and if you hear about somebody doing that on the street, they're like disgusting and immoral. But if it's on TV, it's okay, and everybody loves it and talks about it and watches it. It's weird. It's weird.
Got to meet Rain Manny. I can only assume this is what it's like when you meet the leader of a cult. The hashtag would be good. Hashtag Moonies. What is Moonies?
That's the name of the cult.
The name is, you named your cult Moonies?
I mean, we're going to the moon, so.
Manny, how do you feel about Michael?
So, I clicked on the hashtag Moonies, and it's a bunch of Sailor Moon stuff, so I don't really.
No affiliation.
Manny, I need to, so Michael has picked a goat token.
Yeah.
So, Michael is willing to be sacrificed to your cult. And you started this cult on this podcast. How do you feel about the progression of the cult? What do you stand for? Can you give us our listeners a little insight into, like, what is this cult? What does it mean?
No and no. But I can tell you that it's only fitting to sacrifice the greatest of all time.
And you believe that Michael will one day be that?
No, I think he is that. He's just on his way. It's like his origin story.
All right. Oh, man. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Don't forget to check out Oasis Games, as well as the Mana Base and our Patreon, patreon.com/CCMTG. And we'll see you guys all next week.
magic, magic, magic.